Welcome back to the From Girls to Women podcast, where the voices of young Black females are elevated and celebrated. Hi, I'm your host, Dr. Marquita Cherie Dorsey. The premise of this podcast is to amplify the voices, the concerns, the lived, intersectionally lived experiences of young Black females. The idea oftentimes with young Black females' voices being elevated in the media is that it's usually invisible. So we're here to disrupt that narrative. We want to provide a platform where young Black female voices are heard, they are acknowledged, and they are most of all empowered. The thing is, with this podcast, you're going to find that you're going to be empowered. I know that I have been, so please take a listen. Our first interview for this new season with Miss Naima Malcolm. She is such a dynamic young woman, particularly because of her experiences that she shares at PWI, which stands for Predominantly White Institution, but more really about coming into her own and coming into her own place as a young Black female, doing great things, by the way. You'll hear her voice and you'll hear how she's overcome so many things. So please take a moment, share this, of course, but also listen in to how she has learned how to negotiate her own sense of self-worth and being. Let's take a listen. Tell me what you think are some things that are most concerning to you that relate to the experience of young Black women.
I think the first thing really is the constant struggle with like self-worth and like, you know, self-love. I was just talking to one of my sisters today and she was kind of just expressing to me her journey with like, you know, self-worth and self-love and how it has just, you know, that one single thing has just transpired in so many different facets of her life. And it's affected so many things of her life. And I really had to just, you know, think of like, you know, why don't we feel like we are that girl, you know, like, what is it like? Is it like a society thing? Is it just like, you know, this is what all women go through? So like, it's a thing, but I find it very prevalent in a lot of, you know, when I talk to my peers or just like even older Black women that I know that, you know, this is just a constant like thing that we struggle with. And it appears in work, it appears in relationships, it appears, you know, with our relationship with ourselves or in our family. It's, you know, so like that one single thing really impacts so many different parts of our life. So that's the one thing that's just like, I constantly see that as a thing. And it's even something that I, you know, have dealt with and have, you know, struggled with and to have a healthy relationship with myself and to really know, you know, that I'm like worthy and deserving and stuff. So I definitely think that's one thing.
Can I just ask a probing question here? So the self-worth part, when you say that you felt that way at one point, how did you come to a place where you start to value and find self-worth? Because you seem extraordinarily confident. You seem such, like such a sweet person and kind, right? And you put out positive energy in the world. And I would like to believe that that comes from a place of you having self-worth and value. So how'd you get to this place?
Yeah, I think I really feel like I was just having a conversation earlier. I felt like when I was in high school, I was so interested. Well, like even when I was like younger, like I was always so interested in like the arts. I was so interested in like, you know, I love to listen to like the music that my grandma was playing. So I felt like I was kind of always a little just different from like what everybody traditionally was. Like for one example, like I had within like a span of 5 years, I was in ballet, I did pottery, I did violin, I did the flute, I had a piano set. Like I was just doing so
Renaissance
much.
Renaissance sister.
It was definitely like all that. And, you know, of course, like I didn't stick with those things, but I just always had this passion for like the arts or like creativity and just like expressing myself in what different ways, which isn't something that a lot of people like in my community were doing. Like, you know, like I was going to school in the South Side of Chicago, like my friends, like, you know, they didn't want to go to pottery. They weren't doing ballet. Like they didn't want to learn how to play an instrument. Like, you know, we had band and stuff like that, but it wasn't to like that degree and stuff. So I kind of always felt like a little, I just kind of felt like a little different than everybody. And then once I got to high school, you know, in high school, you kind of are just molded like everybody too. I went to a charter school. We wore uniforms. Like everybody did the same thing. It was a small school, like 100 people. And I did golf. And that's when I told myself, like, well, I went to do golf because I wanted to get a scholarship, but I wasn't that good. But I told myself that I wanted to do something different. And I really wanted to, like, I was just going to do one thing different than all my other friends. And I realized, like, how cool it was to just really finally do something, like, different and just, like, own it. And that was, like, I did it all 4 years. And I still did, like, dance and stuff with my other friends. But it was, like, that one thing that it kind of gave me that push of, like, it's okay to be different. Like, it's okay to enjoy those things that everybody may not enjoy because that's what they're there for. Like, you know, like, even if your friends don't enjoy them, like, you know, somebody else enjoys them.
I love that, Naima. It's okay to be different. And it's okay to try something different.
My other friends were interested now because I started, like, you know, playing golf and they wanted to, like, do it. So it's like owning that you're different. And then that kind of just goes into my self-worth and, like, self-love because I had to really just know that, like, I had to really love Naima because I was, like, I felt different than my friends.
Yeah.
And then when I got to college, I told myself, like, this is a reset. Like, I'm starting over. Like, I'm just going to pour into myself and, like, literally do exactly what I want to do. Like, I'm going to wear my hair the way I want to wear my hair. I'm going to, like, you know, get the tattoos that I want to get. I'm going to do all these things. And it was a lot of, like, pushback. Like, my parents, like, you know, my mom's like, girl, nose piercings, tattoos.
What's going on?
Right. And even, like, me going into marketing, like, majoring in marketing, it was like, oh, like, you don't want to be a doctor. You don't want to be a lawyer. Like, you don't, not, no, like, I don't want to do that. I'm going out and doing things that I really was interested in. It kind of poured back into me. And, like, it made me, like, love myself more because it was, like, I took a leap of faith on myself to do the quote unquote different things that people wanted me to do. And it gave me something good. So it's like, you know, I have to keep doing what's for me and I have to love me because I am different and I bring something to the table when I am different.
That's right. Woo, that's awesome. You bring something to the table when you are yourself and you stepped out, fight what people thought, right? We respect obviously our parents and our family and, you know, but you deciding to take a path of difference is not synonymous with you being disrespectful or you not taking and doing what they want you to do, but it's really you coming to your own. But for the record, please tell the listeners how old you are.
I'm 22. So
because you sound extraordinarily mature. And but I can really appreciate you reflecting on what you got from the times when you stepped out to be and stuck with the difference, right? I'm sure you came against some obstacles, as you pointed out, you know, with stepping out, right?
Yeah, no, and it definitely wasn't easy. I feel like just the whole, like, conversation of wanting to go to school and wanting to, because even before, it's so crazy, I didn't even really want to go to a traditional college. I really wanted to go to fashion school. Mom was like, no, like, if you want to get, like, a degree, like, at least just go to, like, a four-year university and, like, you know, do that way. So I was like, you know, I'll compromise on that. But to even, like, go out and do marketing, like, all my friends were pre-med medical school interest. Like, I think only me and, like, one other person was really kind of interested. And she was in, like, communications. So, like, I was like, I really, like, you know, it was even hard for my peers of, like, okay, like, we're in school now, but, like, I'm in classes by myself. I'm at a PWI in classes by myself, the only, like, a Black girl, like, in this predominantly white man space. Like, I have to know my worth. Like, I have to know that I belong here. Like, I have to know that I'm equal as them, if not better than them, because I'm here, you know? So I feel like definitely taking steps out is something. And that's another thing that I kind of feel like we face. We are so scared to take risks and to really step out on our faith because I think we're just conditioned to, like, just do and, like, do what's stable and, like, do what you, like, quote unquote is right or quote unquote the traditional way. And it's so hard for you to, like, really trust yourself and really, like, step out on the things that you're really passionate about and really just be unapologetically yourself.
Why do you think it's hard, Naima, for us as Black females or young Black females to step out and take that risk?
I think it's because we really don't have too many people in our lives at times who have done it. Like, you know, I think I've been grateful enough to have, like, extraordinary women in my life who have really, you know, taking that step out on themselves, and like really like do what they really were passionate about. But to the flip of that, they waited long. They waited later in their life to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they were like my age, they were like, quote unquote, staying down till they came up, till they really wanted to do their stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's this like, it's kind of like this, like, we got to like kind of struggle in a way to get to where we really want to be or do the things that we really want to do instead of just doing those things from the start. So I really think it's because sometimes we don't have those examples, or we do have those examples. It's like Oprah. Like, mm-hmm. Oprah isn't my aunt. Oprah isn't my grandma. I don't have a direct tie to see how, you know, she's struggling to get to where she had. Like, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. you can read about it. Like, mm-hmm. you can kind of resonate with it, but you don't see it. Like, right. It's kind of like a relationship. Like, you don't know how to be in a healthy relationship. You've never seen a healthy relationship. That's right. Like, I don't really know how to step out on myself or really go full force with the things that I want to do, because I don't really have people who have truly done it done it at my magnitude.
Yep.
I think it's sometimes, and it's also, you know, definitely like environment and like circumstances. I just remember like going to school and like, you know, people will definitely like just discourage you from the things that you're really passionate about. They're, you know, they put it down, or they'll like make jokes about it, or they won't really take it serious. Mm-hmm. And I think our peers and our environment really influences how we feel and how we go about things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so I want to touch on two things before I move to my next main question. You talked about your experience at a PWI, and could you tell us more about that experience, right? Mm-hmm. Because you linked your self-worth to being able to manage. And just for the record, you know, you graduated from this PWI, which meant that you succeeded and you survived, right? And I would even say thrived. And so how would you say you were able to do that, right? You talk about the self-worth part and going into this environment. How do you think that the PWI environment forced you to have to show up?
Mm-hmm. I really think it forced me. So I graduated from the business school. Mm-hmm. So just some background, Mizzou Business School is definitely like predominantly white male space. A lot of successful people come out of the business school. It's a lot of black successful women that come out of the business school. But in times I would come to class and I was either the only girl and I was the only black person. So mm-hmm. that's just giving you the mm-hmm. kind of like range of who was in that space kind mm-hmm. of. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that kept me going in the business school, because it was so hard, Like, I struggled in the business school, and I was a 3.8 high school student. Like, I had a great GPA, like, top in my class, you know, honors classes. And I got to Mizzou, and maybe that 2.6 hit me hard. Mm-hmm. Like, those classes were hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand.
Yeah. I think the thing that kept me going is because I kind of like a challenge, and I kind of don't ever want nobody to think that I kind of gave up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think it also pushed me because I saw the opportunities that were accessible to me if I saw it through. You know, like, I've now worked for a really top beauty company, and I really feel like that was my like goal. Like, every day I'm like, I'm waking up because I know I want to work in this type of industry. I know I want to do this. It may be hard right now, but like, as long as I keep going, I see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I just need to keep going. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that pushed me too is because I was sometimes the only black person or only black girl in that room. So mm-hmm. it was like, I gotta know, I have to be an example, you know. And I saw, like, when I first got to Mizzou, I remember it was maybe like two or three girls. They were black, and they were in business school. They were like thriving and stuff like that. And it just was like, oh my God, like, they're so cool. Like, they are really out here doing it and stuff like that. So I think that was another motivating. It's like I talked about, like, being that example, like, being that person, because I know it was going to be other girls who wanted to go to market, who wanted to go into another business school field. And they needed somebody to see. So it was kind of like, I definitely wanted it for my personal reasons of why I keep them going. But another component was I wanted to be somebody that somebody can see, and they can know I'm okay to be here too. Like, and I deserve to be here too.
Oh, I love that, Naima, that you, that it is, that they deserve to be here too. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you are that example, and you willingly took that position, you know, and pushed yourself and used that as a motivator. That's so fantastic. There's a theme, or a saying that, is woven through the history of black women in America. And it's, we lift as we climb. And mm-hmm. you embody that just by what yes. you just said. And so that's fantastic. Yes. I love Thank it. You.
Yes, yes. I think it's so important. Like, I always have had a mentor. I've always had, like I said, strong women that poured into me. So I just knew as I got older. And I'm an older sister. I'm the oldest sister, too. Like, I'm the oldest child. And I just knew, like, how important it was for me to go to college and to go to college to pursue something that I really was passionate about and to be successful. So my siblings and, like, my cousins can know, like, you don't have to do this traditional, like, mm-hmm. standard for jobs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you can do whatever you want to do as long as you work hard, as long as you're intentional and you have, like, good vibes towards it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah. And it was even so important, like, when I went to Mizzou, like, of course I had a mentor, but I got mentees, too. And I still talk to my mentees. I still check up with them. I still, like, you know, because I just think it's important. Like, if I'm winning, she winning. That's they right. winning. Like, it's That's not like, right. I'm going to win by myself. Like, I'm winning. They're with, like, we're all winning together, you know?
That's so great. Listen, I'll be the first to say I really feel like your generation is going to save the world. With this kind of passion, I feel like we will be okay.
We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
Very
passionate. Yeah. And we're not scared either.
So that's it's right.
Like, you know,
that's right. So thinking about, I mean, I think about the, as you mentioned, the great women that you've had in your life, good examples, right? You mm-hmm. felt supported. You've had opportunities that expose you to new things. I mean, despite the criticism that you received in certain circumstances, you were able to push yourself and develop a healthy sense of self-worth entering into a PWI experience. So what would you say, what are some things that a young woman who may not have those things, right? They may not have exposure to great women, many great women, or maybe they have exposure to one, or maybe they're encouraged in some ways, right? Or maybe they don't have a lot of support in their immediate environment. What are some things that you think as a community, as a society, that we need to make that equitable for every young Black woman, right? What do you think is a broader issue that needs to be resolved so that we can, as a society, lift as we climb, right? Or really reach back and or look to looks next to us to see kind of what the needs are for young Black women. What do you think we need and what do you think needs to change, I guess?
I think first we need access and resources. I think too often we are not, they don't have people that look like us at a table that are in these tables are making decisions that impact our community. Mm-hmm. So I think we definitely need access to rooms. We need access to these communities that need a little bit more support so we can give them resources, so we can give them help. You know, like I was grateful enough to have, like, you know, be in mentoring programs when I was younger, but I knew people, my friends at other schools, they didn't have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then I also know that they couldn't even join the one that I was in because it was specific to my school. So it's things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, we do have things in our community already, but like, they're not accessible to everyone. Like, I think, like, I would have loved to have a mentoring, like, some type of mentoring program for young Black girls in every single set of school that I went through. Mm-hmm. Like, I should have had that in elementary school. I should have had that in middle school, high school, college, post-college. Yeah. Like, and it's just not even, about school stuff. Like, I need to learn how to write checks. I need to learn how to buy a house. I need to learn what's a car. Mm-hmm. Luckily, like I said, I'm privileged enough. And I think oftentimes we don't talk about privilege in our communities because some of us are more privileged than other people. Right. But it's like, how can I use the privilege that I've had to help people that I know that don't have that? So it's like making things accessible across the board for us, which is definitely, you know, something that's going to continuously be a thing. But I think just having some type of like support, it's so important within every aspect of anything. Mm-hmm. I think the second thing, like I said, resources, like, you know, when it comes to like, just like I said, help, even little things of like helping people get to school, you know, or helping people, you know, apply to college because they may be the first generation. They don't Absolutely. Know what a application fee is. So having these type of resources, like, okay, you know, on Saturday, we're going to like spend the day applying to college. I'm going to pay for your college things. you're going to apply to X amount of content, this type of thing. Or like, hey, we're going to go to a used car lot. This is how we're going to buy the car. This is how you're going to pay for it. Like, we need these type of people. We need these type of programs and, like, you know, resources to help and streamline this. Even when it comes to, like, you know, mental health and, like, therapy and stuff like that. Like, you know, making stuff accessible. Like, this stuff shouldn't cost this amount of money. You know what I mean? Like, of course, people need to make their money. Of course, people need to live. But, like, let's try, okay, if I'm going to have four clients that pay me, I'm going to have two clients that I take for free. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, we need access and resources. And it's so unfortunate because we are so, you know, we don't have that. But I think, like, we're just saying, I think we're working towards it. And now more conversations are being had about these things because I kind of feel like my parents' generation, they were kind of still trying to just pick up the pieces from there. You know, it's kind of like we're always trying to pick up the pieces. But I think my generation, we're picking up the pieces and we're redoing the puzzle, you know, instead of just picking up the pieces and having it in our purse. Like, we're picking up the pieces and we're being intentional with the next.
Yeah, so, I like that. Picking up the pieces and recreating the puzzle.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. I mean, I think one of the things that I think that people sometimes forget, right, is just this need, like you said, we're reaching back to pick up these pieces and going with the point about having therapy or getting access to therapy. We forget, you know, that if we want people to engage in some type of therapeutic support, that sometimes there is a cost attached, right? Mm-hmm. And people, if it comes to housing, food, and living expenses, and then you compare that to the cost of therapy, what do we think people are going to choose over the other, right?
Their bills.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's so crazy because I have a line sister, and I love her so much. She's so into mental health, and she's so into just community support, but she raises money every year for her birthday. And this year she raised a lot of money and she paid for students to go to therapy because she's been through a lot as a college student. And I just think, like, it just, like I just said, like, it speaks so much to, like, young Black women. Like, we have it in the brain. We have the plan. We have the ideas. But we just really do meet the platform. Yeah. And it's not just, it's not Oprah platform, but it's, like, community leader platform. Mm-hmm. It's not a community leader, like, just being, like, you know, just something for somebody. Like, I tell myself, whether if I'm famous or not, like, I'm going to always have at least two mentees that, like these are going to be, like, my little sisters. I don't care if they're not my blood. Like, I'm going to make sure they're good, whether it's from academics to mental health to money to whatever, you know?
It just warms my heart to hear you say that because that's exactly what we need, right?
Yeah, young we need women. That. And I think another problem is, and I find this true, I think sometimes since we haven't been traditionally in these spaces and, like, successful, I think sometimes we're scared to allow other people to come along with us. Because we think, okay, they're not going to hire four Black girls, so at least I want to be the only Black girl they hire. Which is, like, in hindsight, it's the system that they put us up against each other. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we kind of, well, we don't ever think that if it's enough for me, like, if it's enough for somebody, it's enough for me too. You know what I mean? And I think that that's just how we've been conditioned and how, like, society just has happened, like, has been. But I think it's really, like, you know, understanding, like, letting that ego go and just being like, okay, it's enough for me.
Yeah.
It's gonna be enough for people. It's enough for them. I can have that too, you know?
And even if that's just so good, Naima, when you think about this idea of crabs in the barrel, right? Where you know, some might pull down others because of this very point you make. So how, what can we do about that? And then I'll move on. What do you think we as a community, let's just start with the Black community, young Black women, your generation, my generation. I'm obviously a little older than you. But what do you think we as a Black woman collective community can do to kind of get at that? Like, how do we deal with that part? Because that's a real issue, right? Where, you know, I don't want someone to feel like they can't take my shine. But we can all shine, right?
I think it really goes back to self-love and self-worth. Like, when you are very much so knowing that, like, you are you and, like, what you have for yourself and whatever life presents is for you. Mm-hmm. And it's not happening to me. It's happening for me. Mm-hmm. It's like, your whole perspective will change. I think, like, I kind of struggled with this when after post-grad. I was, you know, unemployed for, like, 6 months. Technically 6 months. I graduated. I was unemployed looking for a job. And I just remember, like, you know, being so sad. Like, I was just like, why don't I have a job? Like, I graduated from the business school. Like, why aren't people, like, you know, like, just throwing it at me? Like, you know, and I'm just like, dang, you know, like, my peers are working. Like, my peers are traveling to other cities to go get jobs. And, like, I'm sitting at home. And, like, I have this. I paid so much money for this degree, like, I should have had a job, you know?
Yeah.
And I had to step back and have to say, like, at the end of the day, like, I need to be secure and, like, whole within myself to know that that does not define me. Mm-hmm. And I also have to be secure and know that my peers should have these jobs. They should be successful. But since they can also do that, I can also do that. But I have to know it within myself and want, like, I have to love and, like, just honor where I am right now instead of trying to like, think about what everybody else is doing. Like, I need to block everybody else off. It needs to just be Naima. And I really think it goes like this. Like, once you know, and, like, once you're really kind of secure with yourself, and, of course, if ever, you know, I'm not perfect at it. Like, I still have my time. But I think once you kind of just get that little nudge of, like, okay, I am worthy, and I, like, it's for me and stuff, you kind of, you kind of want to radiate it out, and you kind of want to help other people get there. You know,
I think
that's what it is for me. Like, because, like, I have a whole series on my YouTube channel called Waiting to Working, and I really wanted to build it up to, like, let people know and talk about the conversation of, like, post-grad and, like, trying to find a job. And once you get the job, like, what is that looking like now? And, like, how do you balance this? And, like, how do you do that? Because I felt like people weren't having these conversations. Like, I, of course, would have these conversations with my mentors, but, like, on a grand scheme, it's going to be somebody out there that's going to be a first generation, that's going to want to probably do marketing, that's probably going to want to be like me one day. So I need to give people the blueprint.
That's
like,
right.
When I die, I don't want it to just be, you know what I mean? Like, of course I want to be, Naima. But I want people to be like, Naima was, like, a role model for me, and now they're doing way more than me. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's important. And I think this really goes back to, like, that self-love.
And self-worth. Oh, so inspirational. I don't know. I know the listeners have to be inspired by this, because I'm inspired. Honoring where you are right now. That is just so powerful. And I hope that people kind of hold on to that and rest. I'll say this last thing, and then we'll start to wrap up. A couple of, like, I think it was last semester when I was teaching, and I happened to ask the students, were any of them anxious about graduating, right? And I think almost all the students raised their hand, and I just felt so sad, you know, because I felt like, oh my God, what can I do to help? How can I help the students not feel this way and know that this journey, it's a journey, right? It's a journey,
And it's like, nothing, and I also just, like, when you look at life as a journey versus, like, a finish line, and I really had to do that throughout college. Like, I had to know that, like, okay, yes, school is hard. I'm stressed right now. It's sophomore year. Oh, my God. My head is, I'm doing all of this stuff. But then if you look about it, I was a sophomore in 2019. 2020, my life completely changed because of the pandemic. All the stresses and stuff that I'm stressed. Oh, my God, I got to go to class. I got to go to work. I got to da-da-da. Okay.
Yeah.
It was gone.
Yeah.
It was gone.
Yeah.
But nobody would have known that would have happened.
Yeah.
But, like, instead of looking at stuff like, okay, I need to make sure I need to get the thing. No, it's a journey. Like, it's a life. Like, you never know what life is going to throw at you. So instead of trying to overplan, just enjoy right now and take it day by day.
Yes. Woo! You need a standing ovation. That's fantastic. All right. So, last question. Somebody might be listening who is either starting their collegiate journey or wrapping up their collegiate journey, just as you finished, and now you have your postgraduate position, first job out of college. Congrats on that. And someone might be listening who is aspiring or might be dealing with some of the mental struggles that you were thinking about, right? Or that you overcame in terms of, like, what do I do next? And just coming to a resolute that I am where I'm supposed to be. So what would you say, and I want to say, what type of, you know, encouragement would you offer, you know, a young woman who might be listening or that someone knows that might need to hear this? Yeah. What would you say as encouraging words for them to walk away with?
I would say, like, know yourself, know your worth, own your truth, and get some spiritual foundation. Like, what, I'm not saying nothing like religious, but spiritual, like, within yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, take time to be by yourself. Take time to talk and think about and hear what your, like, what thoughts come to your thing. And write those things down. Make voice memos. Like, you know, talk mm-hmm. about those things. Don't hold them in. Mm-hmm. Because I think oftentimes that really, like, those voices in our heads and, like, all this anxiety, like, it gets to us. It gets to mm-hmm. us physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever. So really just having some spiritual, like, foundation just for yourself, within yourself, whether that's your wake up and you'll just listen to the same two songs every morning, or you're going to wake up, you're going to do your devotional, you're going to wake up, you're going to listen to a, like, you know, podcast or whatever, you're going to run, have some type of foundation that is, like, it centers you. Because mm-hmm. I think oftentimes we're so on the run, mm-hmm. we don't really know how to come back to one and center ourselves. And then know yourself, know your worth. Never let nobody tell you nothing about you, because they mm-hmm. have not walked in your path. They have not walked in your shoes. Mm-hmm. It could be your mom. It could be your dad. It could be your sister. Now, of course, they know you for your whole life, but they aren't living your life.
That's right.
And they don't know your heart. They don't know your mind. They don't know what you go through.
Yep.
So know yourself, know your worth, and just have some, like, spiritual foundation, you know, with yourself.
Miss Naima Malcolm, thank you so much for all this inspiration and information. So, you know, for those that are listening, if you need a power talk, an inspiring word, you got to check out Miss Naima's YouTube channel. So give us the handle. What is the name of the channel, and tell us where we can find you?
Yes. So the name of the channel is Naima Sade. I feel like that's my name on YouTube, but you can find me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is @AEEMAHNAY. If you don't remember that, just remember Naima and Pig Latin. You can put that on in Google, because that's what it is. I thought Pig Latin was so cool. I think I heard it in a Lil Wayne song when I was younger with my mom, and I asked her what Pig Latin was. So I just said, you know what, like, I'm going to just use Pig Latin to make my handle. But you can definitely find me on Instagram. My YouTube link will be always in my Instagram bio. And please connect with me. I love having these conversations. I love talking. You'll find it on my YouTube. But if you definitely need some inspiration just when it comes to just, like, figuring out yourself, figuring out what your next steps are with college, check out Waiting to Working with my YouTube channel. We're on episode, like, volume 2.
Nice.
But it's a series that I'll be continually going out for this year.
Yay! I'm very proud of you, Naima.
Thank you.
And I'm so excited for your future. I'm excited for my future, because you yes. and your peers are going to be leading it. So
yes. I'm leading. Y'all have to be ready, because the world is about to change.
That's right. It's about to shift. It's about to shift. Yes.
And it's gonna be a good shift. You know, it may have some kinks and some little kinks in it, but I think ultimately we're moving to a really good place, especially as young Black women. I think we are becoming so much more unapologetically ourselves, mm-hmm. and we're just really owning every single facet of ourselves. We're not just being, you know, the whatever they want us to be. We're being everything we want to be in every space that we can. So I'm excited.
Amazing. Thank you again. I really appreciate this time.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, come on, everybody. How many nuggets and jewels did we get from Miss Naima Malcolm? Thank you so much again for joining us. Please check out our next episode. But most of all, please share this with someone that you know will benefit from this discussion. It's really important that we, one, take the responsibility and mentor, encourage, and support young Black females in a world that really wants to silence their voices and censor them in their way of expression. So let's do our part. Thank you again for sharing your time with us and hearing from this dynamic young woman that, in fact, is our future. Yes, I have hope. This again is your host, Dr. Marquita Jeri Dorsey. And please join us for the next episode of From Girls to Women podcast. Be well. Take care.